Jeff Merrick has returned
yeah.
to the podcast that carries his name.
Yeah.
Finally, right. Jeff Merrick has come back to Merrick versus Wyszynski.
As hip hoppers say, I'm back like a vertebrae, Greg Wyszynski. I am back like a vertebrae. How was Harrison yesterday, by the way?
Harrison killed it. We had a really freewheeling discussion, as one would imagine.
Nice.
Here's the thing that came up that I'd like to bring up with you.
Okay.
Isn't it weird how some general managers and team presidents seem to facially embody the vibe of their team?
How so?
Lou Lamoriello as the mob boss.
Trevor Linden as the scruffy laid-back guy in Vancouver.
Trevor Linden as, you know, you know exactly. George McPhee as Morrissey.
Oh, that's hilarious. I never noticed
Glenn
that before.
Sather as a cigar-chomping oldster. Old school original.
Yeah. No.
There's some GMs point. That embody their teams. The only guy that doesn't. Well, I don't know. Do you think Holmgren does in Philly?
Yeah, because he looks like he's about
to. He was a rough and tumble.
Oh, yeah. Oh, geez. Raw bone. And he looks like he's about to explode at any minute. Who has a tougher front office? I was talking about this a while ago. Who do you think has a tougher front office, Philadelphia or Montreal? Montreal's got a pretty tough front office.
I'll still go Philly.
I'll still go Philly, too. Who's kidding?
Especially with the new addition. I mean, now you have to worry about a goalie stick blade.
Only against Swedes. As long as Kent Nilsson doesn't stick his head up, then Ronette won't have to play whack-a-mole. Hey, can we start off by talking a little bit about Trevor Linden? Because I wasn't here yesterday because
according to
reports on Twitter, I was ducking Harrison Mooney. So
you were.
Couldn't come on yesterday.
Now keep this in mind. Now hold on. Like I said yesterday.
What's up?
Just watch what you say.
Yeah. All right. Gotta be careful.
Lawsuits are flying, man. Don't say the wrong. I don't want to hear anything that even rhymes with Aquilini in what you're about to say. Okay. Us to continue to be able to do this podcast without lawsuits.
I got to tweet about that. Did he file a lawsuit against someone? I just know he called one journalist a jerk or something.
He threatened legal action against both the province and the Globe and Mail for saying he hired Tortorella, which, by the way, is the single biggest vote of confidence you could ever imagine for a coach, when the owner will actively pursue legal action against publications that claim he hired him.
Okay, so who signs Tortorella's checks then? Like, ultimately, Aquilini hired everybody in the organization.
Nope, unsure. It could be anybody who really signed
the checks. Oh, so wasn't Tortorella's money is coming out of Mike Gillis's pocket then?
It's a petty cash fund established years ago by Dave Nonis.
Just a goldfish jar. Sticks his hand in every 2 weeks.
Yep. Gillis reaches in. He's like, "Up, oh, great. We can keep Tortorella for another week.
All right, we're topped off. All right, we're all good.
Fortunately, ladies and gentlemen, we're not having Chipotle for lunch. We simply don't have enough money.
Things happen. I was.
What were you going to say about Trevor Linden?
I have certain concerns about.
Oh, do you?
Well, I mean, listen, with so many people out there, we keep hearing. I mean, personally, I might have gone with someone like Jim Benning for that position in Vancouver, and he may ultimately be the general manager, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I was going to say, for the presidency or for the GM?
It's not a presidency, right? Well, president of hockey operations. So it's more of the day-to-day stuff. So it's not the actual general manager duties, but it's sort of overseeing the operations of, you know, hey, I got to get the rookie tournament together, I got to get medical together, I oversee drafting, and all that kind of stuff. I have concerns when I hear Trevor Linden say, you know, my expertise is limited to my playing days, which when you read in between, and I'm paraphrasing Trevor Linden there, when you read in between the lines, which means I haven't paid attention since I retired.
Yeah, I don't know dick about this sport right
now. I'm going to have to get caught up on it. And who's going to catch him up on it are people that were already there that helped cause this demise of the Vancouver Canucks, people like Lawrence Gilman and Lauren Hennig. And, you know, one of the tip-offs that there was something wrong, like there was something significantly wrong with the Vancouver organization, was when Dave Gagne left as, you know, head of player development. Remember, it was a big deal. It was a great idea, too. And this was a Mike Gillis idea. I believe this was a Mike Gillis idea to bring in Gagne and have him focus specifically on player development. But then you had, you know, the minor league team with a head coach who, you know, essentially is looking after his own job and looking for wins and looking for his portfolio, you know, not playing the kids that have been drafted. And so you have someone like Dave Gagne, who's in charge of player development, who's saying we got to play the kids, and they're not playing the kids. Well, who's the general manager? of the minor league team.
Yep.
Sloan Hennig.
Right.
So you still have people that were there that contributed to the demise. I mean, Lawrence Gilman is wonderful at, you know, at the CBA, and he's talented, and he's been there for a long time. He's a survivor with the Vancouver Canucks organization. But I don't still get how you get rid of Mike Gillis and don't get rid of the people around him. Like, Mike Gillis didn't exist in a vacuum.
Gilman gets a pass because, you know, as bad as some of the transactions by Gillis were, at least the contracts were good. He gets a pass. It's crazy, right? But I like Gilman. I know a lot of people around the league like Gilman
too. Oh, I'm not saying anything bad about Gilman, but I'm saying, like, how do you just isolate one and remove him? Like, if you're gonna give this thing a fresh coat of paint, don't you remove all of them?
Yeah.
And I mean, and listen, the season ticket issue is a very real one. And isn't it interesting too that I'm not sure if you guys made the point on the podcast yesterday, but you know. The Aquilini, oh, I better be careful. The family who owns the Vancouver Canucks, which may or may not be the Aquilinis, you know, have reacted knee-jerk style twice when they heard chants. There was, there was the Luongo chants at the Heritage Classic. That was it. Finally, they'll eat the money, right? And then there was the Fire Gillis chants, and then how many hours later, he's fired. So if I'm a Vancouver Canucks fan right now, you know what my chant is for the next game? Lower tickets.
We want
free beer. Like, honestly, if you're a Vancouver Canucks fan, chance. You'll get what you want.
Yep.
And you know what? You'll get it right away. Because how quickly was Luongo traded after the Luongo chants at Heritage? Pretty effing fast. How quickly was Gillis gone when the Fire Gillis chants happened? I mean, I would have some concerns, let's just say, about this operation. And you're bringing in someone. This is a multi-million dollar operation. The Vancouver Canucks, and you're bringing someone in, as loved as he may be, you're bringing someone in who's green. Someone in who
trade
doesn't
for
have
Stamkos.
That. Get us Crosby. Whatever you want, Vancouver Canucks fans, chant it and you will get it. Because it's happened twice. There have been two chants in Vancouver this year, and both times the owner's raincoat popped off and everybody got
wet. Sir, I don't think Trading the Sedins, Bieksa, and our next 15 first-rounders for Crosby is a wise decision. But the people have asked for it.
Don't you understand? They pay the tickets. Oh, the season ticket renewal is coming, by the way, buddy. And another thing, I pointed this out on Twitter yesterday. I don't know essentially what it means. I mean, the cynical part of me has an answer to it, but I do find it interesting that if you look at the history of previous Players Association presidents who go on to get plum NHL jobs... Trevor Linden was the last president of the National Hockey Players Association. I mean, that position ended with Trevor Linden. But, you know, Ted Lindsay, mm-hmm. Bob Holford, Ken Dryden, Bobby Clark, both Espositos.
Yep.
That's a nudge, by the way, Greg.
I don't know. I got a head cold.
Oh, okay.
Might be even better.
All right. Doug Wilson and now.
I told Terry O'Reilly to call me Mr. President, and he would always bow to my honor and hum hail to the chief whenever we'd walk into the bar and smack that waitress on the behind.
I'm not a big, you know, I'm not a huge pay your dues guy in a lot of ways. I think the best person for the job is the best person for the job, and sometimes there's a lot of value in bringing in someone, quote, from the outside to do the job inside because it's the forest for the trees type situation. But I think in a situation where you're responsible for hundreds of millions of dollars, wouldn't you want someone who's in there who kind of has more of an understanding of the lay of the land?
You would, but that's if you're hiring him to be a player personnel person. Season ticket holders for the Vancouver Canucks received a letter from Trevor Linden roughly 4 hours, maybe 3 hours after the introductory press conference.
Did you see the video phone call to his parents?
To his parents?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Trevor Linden told them that on Friday at noon, there will be a video webcast that will be a Q&A session with season ticket holders with Trevor Linden. And, you should also remember, and this is the essential point of why I'm telling you this, the season ticket deadline for the Vancouver Canucks in 2013 was Wednesday, April 17th. Mm-hmm. So by Wednesday, April 17th, you either shit or get off the pot with your season tickets. You could not get your deposit back unless you pulled out by then. Mm-hmm. The deadline in 2014 for season ticket holders to get their deposit back, fully refundable, is July 11th.
Hmm.
So you bring in Trevor Linden. He's a very charming man with a full head of hair. And you extend the season ticket refund deadline to, what, over a week into free agency?
No.
Not many teams doing this, Merrick.
No, not many teams. And, you know...
Most teams do the full court press before the end of the season.
Yeah, they do.
Not many teams are pushing their chips in on what we're going to do for the next 2 or 3 months in order for you to renew your season tickets.
If you're the family who can't be named, I mean, you know, after that run, going to the Stanley Cup, you know, two President's Trophies, top team in the NHL, players are scooping up individual awards, everything is sunny in Vancouver outside of, you know, not actually winning the Stanley Cup. I mean, they really juiced the marketplace and sort of, you know, not just elevated expectations, but elevated the price for those expectations. Right. And as we've talked about, and many people have as well, the fall from grace has been fast. So now it's panic because now we have a product that's not in the playoffs and we have a fan base that probably, unlike Toronto, will not continue to be walking ATM machines.
Right.
They just won't.
Toronto's a unique market. Like, that's why the Shanahan stuff's so confusing to me. Like, you don't need that. Like, you don't need Brendan Shanahan to come in and be like, hey, everybody, different thinking. I think Leafs fans are going to show up anyway. And I also think Leafs fans are more the kind of people that aren't going to necessarily go for the nostalgia thing, but go for competency more than anything else. Like, I think if you took Wendell Clark and made him the president of the team, there'd be a section of the fan base that will pop champagne, would pop Molson. And there'd be a section of the fan base that would be like, oh, so a completely inexperienced guy is now going to lead us out of this malaise because he was our favorite player growing up.
I still maintain that there in no hockey market will there be, you know, will celebrity Trump wins? Will nostalgia Trump wins? No, dude. If it's bad, it's bad. And you grease your reputation.
I know. But in some cases, like the Sakic thing was a success.
Because they're winning. That's
you know
it.
Because they're
winning.
No one
That's
ever talks
why.
About Cam Neely. No one ever talks about Cam Neely. As a success story.
Well, because they're
as
winning.
As far as, like, former. Yeah.
But you're right. He was.
So you say.
That's it. Like, if it was Cam Neely and this team and the Boston Bruins, you know, were losing consistently, would everyone have the worm and fuzzies about, hey, man, there's big number 8 up there, the Hall of Famer. Oh, man, I wish he really would have pummeled Dolph. No.
No, they would have hired Ray Bourque by now. as a GM. That's what they would have done, right? One last thing on Linden before we move on.
Yeah, what's
we
up?
Got Ken Holland on the show today, and that's really important.
Very cool, yeah.
How much stock? I've seen some of the old school guys put a lot of stock into the idea that Trevor Linden being a sleeper agent for the National Hockey League during the 2005 lockout and beyond is going to affect his ability to attract talent to that market. Do you buy that?
I know that what happened with Trevor Linden and Ted Saskin didn't sit well with a lot of members of the Players Association. If we want to bore people and rewind here, but I mean, Bob Goodnow went around team to team, player to player, and said, "Well, the battle lines are going to be drawn over a salary cap. Do you want a salary cap?" And to a person, they said no. And then Bob said, "Okay, this might take 2 years. Do you still not want a salary cap?" And almost unanimously, they all said, "No, we don't want a salary cap." And then there was a change of philosophy from the president of the Players Association and then the second in command of the National Hockey League Players Association, Ted Saskin. A lot of players felt burned by that. And every time a player's little piece of escrow comes off their check, a lot of guys still think back to the battle where the players caved. I don't know that it significantly hurts him when he goes free agent shopping because players will still look for the best deals. I just know that that doesn't sit well around the National Hockey League Players Association, from what I'm told.
It probably doesn't, but like my takeaway from this is this. Let's assume Trevor Linden stays in this role for a few years, okay? And a guy like Ryan Johansson becomes a free agent. He was 14 years old in 2005.
Yeah, but I think it matters
to some people, but it doesn't matter to younger people. It's the same thing we see every lockout.
I know, but
the old school veteran guys are the ones carrying the torch.
Okay.
They're like, we got to fight. And the young guys are like, can we just get back and make millions?
Yeah, okay, but the issue there is, though, it's not just the players that exist in that vacuum. They also have agents who went through it as well, who will take great delight in reminding all these players what happened and why they have a salary cap and why they have the dirty E word that no player likes to talk about.
That's a fair point on the agents.
Right? I mean, there's only a couple of guys that are doing their own deals, and those guys are all vets. Because they don't want to pay agents anymore. They're just doing their own deals.
And Ovechkin does.
Hamerlick did.
He won't have to do another one, but he did the first one.
He did, too. Thank you, Don Meehan. We'll be done now.
All right, everybody. Kenny Holland coming up on the show today. And also the question of the day. It's about the playoffs.
Yep.
Merrick doesn't know what it is. I don't think.
Yeah, what is it, by the way? I don't even know what the Q&A is today.
Here it is. Question of the day is, of the matchups that are settled or of the matchups that could happen in the first round, which is the one that you're salivating over? Which is the one you want to see most based on what the combinations look like they might be moving forward? PuckDaddyBlog at Yahoo.com, at Wyshynski, at Jeff Merrick on Twitter, hashtag at NVSW. And with that, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
They are selling hope, and you need hope on
They're
display.
Selling
hope
exactly.
on display.
Exactly.
That's right. When he drinks. You've been around him when he drinks?
That's about Greg,
he
by the way.
He drinks often. He has a problem, folks.
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Yesterday was Make Your Own Deli Sandwich Day. I made a delicious chicken salad on Asiago cheese roll with truffle mayonnaise. I've only done one radio interview on the toilet.
Debate hockey.
I'm happy that neither of us are Russian today.
Well, we were Russian yesterday because we didn't do the show. We were scratched. Healthy scratched.
Hey, look here. Here we go. This is texting Merrick during the game.
Pop culture.
Leave those special brownies at home. Mm-hmm. Jeff and I have had enough.
That's right.
I tell you.
Yep. Yeah.
Indeed.
I don't care. You can.
No.
I don't care about those cookies. You keep those to yourself. Nope. Not him eating those. Not taking those before a long flight.
Merrick versus Wyshynski.
I'd like to thank someone named, let me see if I get his name right here. Let's see. This was from Simon. I want to thank Simon, a Redditor, mm-hmm. a Reddit commenter.
Is that what you call him, Redditor?
Great. Yeah, on the great r/hockey forum that everyone liberally steals from and only blogs like ours credit. He was good enough to put together a chart, Jeff Merrick,
okay.
of the preseason selections by the Puck Daddy staff. Myself, Leahy, Harrison, Lambert, Kostanica, Sam McKeag, the editor, and Daryl Dobbs, Dobber from Fantasy Hockey. Mm-hmm. And what he did was he gave 5 points for each selection that was correct in each division.
All right.
Okay? And for each spot that was off, he deducted 1 point. So if I predicted Chicago first in the Central, and I would then get 3 points because Chicago finished third. You got it?
Gotcha.
Now, you're saying to yourself, who came out on top as far as the accuracy of selections?
You did.
That's a great guess because you are correct. I am the king of prognostication.
All right, Grace.
Harrison Mooney is second. Mm-hmm. Ryan Lambert is third. Nick is fourth.
Oh,
Nick. Leahy and Sam are tied for fifth. And Daryl Dobbs.
Dobbs.
That's why they play the games, Merrick, and not in computers. They play them on the ice, not in computers.
They don't play those games in computers, yo. Kenny Hall is going to join us here in a couple of seconds. Wish Maddie's just on the phone with him now.
Well, real quick on the Red Wings, if you haven't heard, of course you've heard. 23rd consecutive season in the playoffs for them with a loser point last night in Pittsburgh. Unbelievable. And you know, we put over Babcock before on the show, but again, you come back to it. They rallied for a playoff spot in March. Without Datsyuk or Zetterberg playing a single second during the month.
Oh, I mean, the man games lost are a record for the franchise. What happened this year with the Detroit Red Wings is an absolute freak. I mean, they've always been that, you know, that model organization on the ice and off the ice, you know, respect all throughout the NHL and to the entire hockey world. But I think what was done this year was nothing short of staggering and mind-blowing. And the general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, Ken Holland, joins us now. Ken, I'm guessing your favorite number today is 23, true or false?
Yeah, just thrilled to be in for the 23rd straight year and be part of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Nothing like it.
Was there a part of the season, Kenny, where you were legit concerned you weren't going to make it, say, around your 50th injury?
Well, you know, first off, it's hard to make the playoffs. I mean, you know, basically we're in a league with competitive balance, and when the regular season's over, half are in and half are out. So it's just hard to make the playoffs. And then, you know, I think that, you know, we felt good about the moves that we had made last summer, you know, with the addition of Daniel Alfredson, with the addition of Stephen Weiss, and we felt that, you know, some of our kids had good playoffs in the American League. We felt that coming into this year, we had the makings of a pretty good team. You never really know until you get probably 20 games in. And then, you know, early December, we were 7 games over .500. We had just won 4 in a row. Darren Helm got back, and we just started to feel good about ourselves. And Zetterberg went down, and it just seemed from that point that Erickson was down, I think, at that time. And it just, basically December, January, up until the Olympic break, I think we were just treading water. We were trying to stay afloat. And I thought that, you know, the story probably for us playing our way in has been really the play of our kids. You know, the kids being guys like Luke Glendening and Riley Sheehan, Tatar Nyquist, Thomas Jurco. And I think that Mike Babcock and Tom Rennie and Bill Peters and Keith McKittrick and Jim Bedard, our coaches, have really done a fabulous job in having our team play structured and finding a way to kind of stay in the game on a night-to-night basis and win enough. You know, we basically played 500 hockey for 3 months up until about, I think we're 9-4-2 our last 15 games. So we basically played 500 hockey for about 3 months, just really trying to stay afloat.
Ken, we want to talk about the kids in a second, but I want to rewind to the trade deadline. And if you didn't have the injuries that you had at that time at the center position, do you still make the David Legault trade? Because you gave up, as you well know, a really good young player in Cali Yarncroc.
Yeah, no. I had actually talked to David Poile about a week before the trade deadline and told him that, or maybe it was just during the Olympic break, that we're all making our calls and you know, David and I were talking, you know, maybe a week or 10 days before, and David Poile was saying to me, if I do something here, what do you have any needs? And I said, you know, certainly not looking to do anything up front. And, you know, we felt that we were going to get Stephen Weiss back out of the Olympic break. We thought that, you know, we knew we'd lost Zetterberg, but I thought, you know, Pav was going to come back. Darren Helm was going to be healthy. And then over the course of 72 hours leading into the trade deadline, kept getting news that another forward had gone down. You know, the Tuesday night before the trade deadline, went down after the second intermission, pulled from the game. He was having concussion symptoms, and the next morning he got a report from a doctor that they were going to shut Pav down for 3 weeks, and we weren't sure where he was going to be even in 3 weeks. So at that point in time, about noon, 11 a.m. On the trade deadline day, I called David Poile, and, you know, we put the deal together. You know, we like Kelly Yarncroc. I think he's an NHL player. I think he's going to be a real good NHL player. But with the development of you know, when you look at our team, Datsyuk's got 3 more years. Zetterberg's got a lot more years. Franson. You know, we've signed Stephen Weiss. We've got Riley Sheehan. We really like Luke Glendening. You know, the last 10 days we've played Boston at home and Pittsburgh at home, and Mike Babcock has played Glendening head-to-head against Crosby and Bergeron, and we won both games. So it was just going to be a hard lineup for Kelly to crack and get somebody, and I'm not sure that we would have made the playoffs. Actually, Mike Babcock and I were talking on the plane last night. I don't know if we don't have... If we don't do the deal for David Legault, I'm not sure if we're even in the playoffs. He came in and gave us stability down the middle, gave us experience down the middle for about 10 games while we just had a lot of kids and a lot of vets down. And, you know, he's a local boy, David, and I'm sure we'll talk after the year. And certainly I think that there's a potential to do it, you know, to find a way here. So, you know, it was a big price, but I don't think we make the playoffs without David Legault, and we could afford to make the deal because of the way a lot of our other young kids had played. And when you add in Anthony Mantha, who we think is a real prospect, and we're going to give him a chance, we're hoping here in the next year and a half, if not sooner, he makes our team. you know, our scouts have done a good job, and we've got a number of kids.
There's been a lot written about the fact that the Western Conference is going to have a couple of extra playoff teams this year, with both you guys and the Blue Jackets making it in the East. But I was looking at the schedule, Kenny. Since the Olympics, the farthest west the Red Wings had to travel was Minnesota. How much has realignment helped you guys through all the adversity that you had after the Olympic break?
Well, you know, to your point, I mean, I think, you know, we were fortunate. We got a Western Canada trip out of the way, I think, in November. And then right after the Winter Classic, we went out and did our California trip. So, you know, down the stretch here, the last, you know, like you said, since the Olympic break, I mean, our road trips have been, I think we did a road trip to, you know, Chicago and Minnesota. We got to go into St. Louis on Sunday. But other than that, it's all been, East Coast. I think my last Florida trip was right before the Olympic break. So we've had a real good schedule with, not a lot of travel. You know, the last two nights we were in Buffalo. It was a 35-minute flight to Buffalo. It was a 25-minute flight from Buffalo to Pittsburgh. And last night it was a 30-minute flight from Pittsburgh home. You know, last year, 30 minutes in, we were just getting nestled into our computers for two and a half hours more flying time somewhere. So certainly being in the East has reduced our travel significantly, and, you know, less wear and tear on the body. And you know, you look at last year, our first round matchup in the playoffs was Anaheim, and for both Anaheim and us, you know, it was every time we were changing locations, it was an all day travel day. You know, now we're looking at Pittsburgh or Boston, and you know, I think it's an hour flight to Boston, and like I said, 25-30 minutes to Pittsburgh. So certainly, moving east has been a lot easier on the bodies of our players.
We got to get to Gustav Nyquist. I mean, what a remarkable story he's been for you guys, Ken. And, you know, traditionally, what we've seen you do is over-ripen players in the American Hockey League system in Grand Rapids, but mainly defensemen. At what point in your mind, though, did you look at Gustav Nyquist playing with the Griffins and say to yourself, he's ready to play full-time in the NHL?
Well, I'm a big believer that, you know, I guess it's my 9 years of experience as a player from 1975 to 85. I played AAA, you know, playing the American League, mm-hmm. and see kids go up, young players, and then they come back. And then spending time with Scotty Bowman from 1995 to 2002 reinforced, the value of experience. So I'm a believer. You really establish yourself at one level, and then you move to another level. The other thing is, we haven't picked high. We don't pick in the top five or six or seven. We don't get those players that can go directly from junior into the NHL. There's a process for us to get them there. So I would say to you that, you know, Gus was obviously a fabulous college player. He was in the top 10 in scoring as a rookie in the American League, and then we decided to send him back. He led the American League in scoring. He really should have been on our team to start the year. But when we signed Daniel Alfredson, when we signed Stephen Weiss, we felt over the summer that we had we hoped we're going to have a healthy Darren Helm and Yapav and Z and Franson. And we knew we had to have Tatar on the team because he couldn't go down through waivers. You know, he really probably should have been on the team, but because of all those moves, you know, we sent him down to start the year, but 15 games in, he was third or fourth American League in scoring, and we were struggling for goals. We had a lot of people hurt right out of the gate. So he came back, and we brought him up 15 games in. He certainly, you know, the way he played from early January till now, he's been a big reason. He's a big reason why we've qualified for the playoffs. He was scoring at a pace of almost a goal a game. When we had a lot of people down. So, I think the last two, three games, he's been a little quiet, a little less ice time, his responsibility isn't as big again. And I also think realistically to think that Gus is going to score, 22 goals in 28 games. I think it's pretty unrealistic. Because now once you start to score, the other team starts to key on you. And their job is to shut you down. So, but certainly he's been a great story. He's going to be a real good player for us. And, you know, Tatar, Sheehan and Nyquist, certainly it's a real good line for us and helps provide us with some real good scoring or secondary scoring.
Kenny, a couple more real quick. First off, you obviously know what Mike Babcock is capable of as a head coach. Clue us in on how good he's been this year in trying to manipulate this team to a playoff spot.
Well, I think, you know, I just think, you know, Mike, when I hired Mike in 2005, you know, and I knew Mike from the early 90s when I was scouting for the Red Wings and he was coaching Spokane, and our second round pick goalie Aaron Miller was in Spokane, and then Anaheim Ducks, Pierre Gauthier, I think, hired him and put him as the head coach in Cincinnati, and Detroit and Anaheim shared players in the late 90s in Cincinnati in the American Hockey League. So I went down there 10, 12 times a year and saw the job that Mike did with a lot of our young kids. You know, he was a coach for 20 years before he got to the NHL in Anaheim and then knocked us out in a sweep in 2003 and took Anaheim to Game 7 of the finals. He's been a career coach. He's not making it up on that. He knows what he wants. And I think that the experience of coaching the star players from 2005 till, for 5 or 6 or 7 years when we had Yzerman and Chelios and Hasek and Shanahan, you know, he's learned how to handle the superstar players. And this year, you know, handling young kids, that's what he did in Spokane, and that's what he did in Moose Jaw, that's what he did in Cincinnati, the American Hockey League. He handled young kids, young players. So, you know, he's a coach that knows how to handle veterans. He knows how to handle young players. And he's done a fabulous job for us. But I think he does a fabulous job for us year in and year out. You know, we're structured. He pushes our team, but he knows when to back off, when to give them space. But certainly the players know exactly what his expectations are of them on an everyday basis.
Last one from this microphone, Ken, and we thank you for your time. You played when you played in the American Hockey League with Binghamton. Jim Corsi was on that team, albeit briefly, and he's sort of become the godfather for sports analytics and fancy stats. Where are you at when it comes to player evaluation? How much do the Corsi and Fenwick and this type of new information in the NHL, how much of that does it factor in on Ken Holland's decision on the value of a player, if at all?
Well, a little bit. Now, we're just slowly getting there. We're dipping our toe in the water. I think that, you know, the analytics that we use are those, like, you know, they're gut analytics. I think the experience, but certainly I think there's a place for numbers in our game. I still think that it's different than baseball, where baseball's a lot of one pitcher versus batter, and you know, what you do as a player here on the ice, still, there's four other players with you, and whether you go from team to team or different situations, and you're against five other players. So, you know, I think that analytics can weigh into your decision. So I think there's a lot of things that got, you know, what your pro scouts see, what you feel, you go through the whole analysis. Ultimately, you're trying to be right 70% of the time. It's impossible to be right 100% of the time because we're dealing with people. So analytics play a little bit of a part. We do have it. We do look at it. But I wouldn't say it's got a big, big factor in our decision-making yet. But we're still exploring it. We're talking about it internally. We're trying to figure out how it can best help us.
Last one for me, Kenny, and thank you so much for all the time today. You and I, of course, are at the forefront of the war on the shootout. Tell us, sir, where we are in that battle. Give us a progress report on the war front, sir, as we continue to battle back against the shootout.
You know, I think that I have lost the battle a little bit. I think that, I don't have a problem with the shootout. I think that, my soapbox, I guess, heading into the general manager's meetings here over the last 6 months have been, 57% of our overtime games go to a shootout. I'd like to see 57% of our games decided by playing 4-on-4. I've suggested 3-on-3, but I'm okay 4-on-4. I would just like to reduce the impact of shootout. I'm not against the shootout. I know it's here to stay. Next year, I think what we're going to do is we're going to You know, we're going to do the long change. We're going to, they think that the long change had an impact at the, to the degree of 10% in the United States USHL. So we'll try that and see where it's at. So I think the fans like the shootout. I think the game needs to be brought to a conclusion. You know, my take would be to take the extra time from 5 minutes to 7 or 8 minutes. I suggested 3-on-3. But for now, I'm okay that let's try it next year with a long change. Let's see if we can have a few more games decided, a few more percentage points decided by 4-on-4 versus shootout. I just think that when you look at the standings today, and teams are making and missing the playoffs by 1, 2, and 3 points, you know, you know, I'd like to think that the game is decided by playing what I would call hockey versus the shootout. But I also understand in today's world, the game needs to be, we can't end in a tie and we can't be there all night trying to break a tie. At some point in time, you got to stop the game down and we got to figure out a quick way to determine a winner and a loser because the fans have got to go home and the players have got to go on to the next city. So, you know, I'm not against a shootout.
A very thoughtful answer from one of the most thoughtful general managers in the game. Ken, thanks so much for doing this. And the number 23 looks great on your organization.
Thank you.
Ken Holland, GM of the Detroit Red Wings. Making a lot of
I'm
sense.
I'm totally against the shootout.
I know you're against it. I know you want a gun. You want it in the ground. You want to dance on the grave.
I know that he has to get. He's a politician at the end of the day, sir. He has to give lip service to the insanity of the shootout, not upset the apple cart, as it were. He needs to build a coalition in order to get this thing done. I, on the other hand, can express my my animosity and my hatred of the shootout full force, and I hope that one day we all can celebrate and drink the blood of the shootout, and Ken Holland and I will hoist that chalice together, sir.
And drink the blood from the bloody carcass of the shootouts. Is that what you'll do?
Of the shootout. Oh, yeah. My God. Oh, it would be the best, wouldn't it?
No.
Anyway.
No. Although I'd be cool with Taz coming. I would be fine getting rid of the shootout. I would be fine with it as long as everybody in the world agrees that we're fine with Taz again. Because to Ken's point, you're not going to play an extra half an hour to try to get a winner if that's what it takes. especially not, by the way, especially not in San Jose with your 7:30 starts and then trying to get to a plane before a curfew. I will tell you that right away. Not a chance, which is the bane of many visiting teams' existence in the San Jose area.
Kenny Holland's great, isn't he?
Yes, he is. The thing that the Red Wings
do better than anybody else in this league, and it's been proven now because I thought that the Devils were a team that did it too, but I don't believe that anymore. Maybe they're a victim of circumstance with what happened with Parise and Kovalchuk, or maybe that was a making of their, you know, they made their own problem there. They rebuild on the fly. They're the one team for the last 23 years that has successfully been able to rebuild on the fly. And
now,
it's awesome, isn't it?
Now yes, absolutely true. Now, they have had the luxury, and I talked, you know, and Ken talked about this as well. They have had the luxury of being able to let players overripen in the American Hockey League. Like, that is a luxury that some teams just don't have. You have to get your kids up there. You got to get them in. And as awkward as it may be, Ryan Johansson with the Columbus Blue Jackets, it may take a little while longer until you get, you know, a return on your investment. But the presence of players like, let's just say Nick Lidstrom, you know, has allowed Ken Holland, you know, to overripen. I mean, really, when did you think Brendan Smith was ready to be an NHLer? Because it's different. It's different than when he actually got called up. And same thing
for
Gustav
Nyquist.
It was right after he stopped taking
preseason suspensions.
8 gamers in the preseason for knocking Ben Smith's head off his shoulders.
I mean, what is that, right? That's when you know he's not ripe yet.
Right, you're not ripe yet, kid. Get back down there. You still have too much green on that banana. I sent out the quote because it's an interesting one. I sent it out, you know, without comment, without prejudice. Because I'm legitimately curious, like how much stock the Red Wings put in analytics. And, you know, the quote, and I just threw it out there on Twitter and getting some interesting responses too. The analytics we use are gut analytics, is really interesting as well, because of all the general managers around the NHL, if you could point to one team that has been on, you know, at the precipice, on the vanguard of progressive thinking and puck possession, because that plays right into the wheelhouse for the Detroit Red Wings. you would think that Ken Holland would say, yeah, you know what, we really do pay attention and mind our knitting when it comes to things like Corsi and Fenwick. We really do pay, and that's how we evaluate players.
Yeah.
But to say that it's the eyeball test more than anything else, that raised an eyebrow for me.
Yeah, it did me too. But I'll be honest with you, like the first time that I seriously thought about puck possession as a metric or as something measurable or as something to pay attention to was because of the Red Wings. Mm-hmm. It really was. Like they were the team that showed the way that simple concept, if you have the puck, it means they don't.
Yeah. But that presupposes that that's the only way you can win it. You can win at this game.
Right.
I mean, one of the criticisms of analytics, the way it's handled now and the way it's treated, is that it presupposes that there is only one way to be successful in the NHL. And if you're not doing it that way, you can't be successful. The Colorado Avalanche this year have, and again, it is only one team.
Yeah, well,
the Avalanche have sort of flipped.
You've read Dello on that, right? Dello is convinced that the Avalanche are unsustainable, the Ducks are unsustainable.
Yeah.
So you think do you think he's right on that?
Could be. Well, fine. I mean, I'm still skeptical about Colorado more than I am about Anaheim. I don't know. I'm very curious to see what happens with the Avs next season because, again, I still don't love that blue line. And that's eyeball. That's not analytics. But I think anyone who eyeballs that blue line says to yourself, I wonder how they're doing this. And, again, we talked about this before. I mean, when teams catch on and figure out a way and it finally works to combat the man-on-man defense in their own zone, things will change. I'm more curious about Colorado, let's say, than I am about the Anaheim Ducks.
Do you think Ryan O'Reilly should get the Selke? Was asked yesterday by somebody.
No, I think Patrice Bergeron should.
It's going into the numbers. I did the chart piece this morning for about the Norris. Going into the numbers on Bergeron, it's like it's insane how good he is.
I know he's,
and it's insane how the stat that I'm kind of in love with right now, and I know it's like a basic metric for hockey, but is the idea of, you know, how many shots they give up when he's not on the ice versus how many shots they give up on the ice. It's a very simple Corsi metric. But the idea that they're so much better offensively and defensively when he's on the ice is ridiculous.
Yeah, he is. And, you know, it's funny, too, about his career, as he was one of those guys that I always loved because he was the perennial rookie. Like, if you look at, you know, growing up from, you know, from Bantam to Midget to the Quebec League to the minors to the NHL, he didn't stay in one place very long. Right. Like he went like from Bantam to Midget to Junior to the NHL to the American League, like it all in sort of 1 year successions. That's what's most impressive about Patrice Bergeron to me, almost as if it sounds so, you know, sort of, air, you know, really like you're frivolous about it when you say it. But there are just some guys that are born to do it. And when you look at Patrice Bergeron and how he plays and how he picks up on things and how he plays so well at both ends of the ice, you almost say to yourself, this guy's born to play hockey.
Yep.
Doesn't disqualify how hard he's worked to get there, because I'm sure it's been, you know, like many players in the NHL at the elite level. But there are just some guys that just get every aspect of the game and every aspect of his position, and Patrice Bergeron's Exhibit A.
He really is. Should we sound the breaking news alarm, sir?
Oh.
I don't know if we have one.
When news breaks, Greg fixes it. What's the breaking news? Who's been fired now?
The NHL has been hit with a second concussion lawsuit. A major class action lawsuit was just filed in U.S. District Court in New York. One of the lawyers, the firm that is representing these nine players.
Ooh, I just saw this here. Okay.
Won over $7 billion for victims of the Enron fraud. The players involved, Jeff Merrick, household names, all of them.
Yeah, Dan Lacouture, Dan Kesmer, Jack Carlson, uh-huh. Richard Brennan, uh-huh. Brad Maxwell, Mike Peluso, Tom Youngins, Alan Warwick, and Scott Bailey. Jack Carlson?
Okay, for those who don't know why Merrick just said that, Jack Carlson is the brother
who didn't go
of the Hanson brothers.
That's right.
Steve and who was the other cat?
Jeff.
Steve and Jeff became the Hansons. Dave Hansen became their brother in the movie because Jack Carlson actually got called up
right.
for the minor league team he was playing for.
That's right.
Decided to pursue a hockey career rather than pursuing a film career. Long story short, he's in a concussion lawsuit, and the Hansons are still making money doing appearances.
Okay, so look at this here then. The NHL's known violent conflict, NHL's knowledge of head trauma to its own icons. Gordie Howe's head trauma, Mark Savard's head trauma, Nick Kyprios's head trauma, Darren Vasky, Gino Ajic, Jeff Dean Chanel, Jeff Cornell, Peter Sabota, Jeff Bucha. Whoa, look at this.
If you go inside this lawsuit, sir, there is an entire, they go down blow by blow. Here are the names. The NHL's knowledge of head trauma on its own icons. Here are the names they list. Gordie Howe, Mark Savard, Nick Kyprios, Dennis Vasky, Gino Ojek, Dean Chanouf, Jeff Cortinal, Peter Svoboda, Jeff Bugaboon, Adam Deadmarsh, Stu Grimson, the Moose Brothers.
Moore Brothers. No, that's an R.
Oh, I'm sorry. I read that wrong. Thank you. Because Moose Brothers would be hilarious.
That would be awesome. I wish there was a Moose Brothers in the NHL, man.
Keith Primo, Matthew Barnaby, Mike Richter, Scott Stevens. Oh, come on now. Like, Stevens should ever have his name in a concussion lawsuit. Pat LaFontaine, Chris Pronger, again. Paul Kariya, the Lindros Brothers, again. Yeah. And Tony Granato. So these are all of the – there's a full section, blow by blow, what happened to these guys in painting a picture of what the NHL did negligently. Well, the lawsuit's on Puck Daddy. You can read it now. I haven't obviously gotten a chance to go through it because we're on the air.
Yes.
And there's that. But, yeah, another concussion lawsuit, 9 players.
See, you know where the effects of this will be felt, and I don't know if either of the lawsuits go through or either of the lawsuits are successful. But
First off, before you say that, I'm interested to see how many of these guys stick with it, because the flag bearer for the previous lawsuit left within like 3 days of it being filed, and that was Rick Vive.
That's right. Well, because you know he would still like to work in the industry. Thank you very much, either for the Buffalo Sabres alumni or for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Where I think things like this will be felt, Greg, is much where it'll be felt in the NFL. And it's not this generation right now. It'll be the generation where the parents say, I don't want our kid playing hockey. Right? Like, I battle with this. I mean, I've got a, you know, TJ turns 4 in June and Brody's 2. And they love hockey. We play hockey every day down in the basement. And I wrestle as a parent with, you know, how safe the game is. I balance that off with saying I can't nerf the world and bubble wrap my kids. But on the other hand, I say to myself, well, as a parent, it is my job to make sure that they are as protected as possible while still having their eyes opened wide about what the nature of contact sports is, if they choose to play it. Mm-hmm. You know, the NFL is going to face a crisis in about 30 years, I suspect. And you're already starting to see it now with the lack of play of young kids that want to actually play football because of all the head trauma and the lawsuits and the publicity. That's where this will be felt as well, too. You know, it's that the generation of parent, maybe it's me or maybe it's the next generation of parent. Because, you know, I grew up, you know, with the, you know, hey, man, he got his bell rung. Ho, ho, ho. Hey, man, get the smelling salts off. Yeah. Hey, buddy, keep your head up. You know, that's what I grew up with. It's the next generation of parent, I think, that looks at the sport and says, I don't know that I want my kids doing that.
That's a very salient point, because I'm glancing over the lawsuit and getting this part. Specifically, despite the fact the NHL's violent game design induces head trauma, specifically including concussions, the NHL has failed and continues to fail to warn its players of the risks to their lives and the devastating and long-term negative health
effects. I don't know about that one. I don't know about that
one. I'm sure that they are talking about the NHL's refusal to really acknowledge CTE, which they haven't necessarily done. But you have – listen.
But even the medical community isn't 100% on that as far as causation.
That's true. But let's be honest here. It's 2014, okay? I know we're PG-13. You have to be a fucking moron not to know about concussions in 2014. Mm-hmm. The NHL doesn't have to hold your hand, okay? A little personal responsibility. The idea that you could ever say that the league – hasn't acknowledged concussions and hasn't educated about concussions and how to hit guys is insane.
On page 52 of this.
Ooh, welcome to the Merrick Wyshynski Read a Concussion Lawsuit Hour.
Hang on a second. I'll tell you why.
Dan LaCouture, by the way, is a resident of the state of Massachusetts.
Hang on, let me get to page 52 here, because apparently... Oh, man, it's all blurry.
I believe that is the Mike Peluso, by the way, who played for the Devils.
Yeah.
And not the other Mike Peluso. That was always in the video games and made it confusing.
It says in this lawsuit. Gordie Howe's head trauma. Go down to Gordie Howe. In 2009, Howe died from a neurodegenerative disease known as Pick's disease. Last time I checked, Gordie Howe isn't dead, ladies and gentlemen. So in this lawsuit, it says that Gordie Howe died. Go to page 52, bud. It says Gordie Howe's dead.
All right, let me see here.
Go to 52. Gordie Howe's head trauma issues.
Let's see here. Page 52. Gordie Howe.
In 2009.
Oh, I think I have the different page numbers than you. Okay. In 2009, Howe died from the neurodegenerative disease known as Pick's disease. But here's the great part about it, right?
Yeah.
It's... It's got a footnote.
Dan Robson, the toughest fight of Gordie Howe's life, Sportsnet 2013. Dan Robson is not going to put that Gordie Howe's dead.
The footnote's from 2013, and the name of the story is The Toughest Fight of Gordie Howe's Life. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Okay.
Someone just read that and said, I'm going to have to Dennis Vibe this bitch because I can't be part of this one.
I don't know about this.
No, about this one. By the way, liberal use of hockeyfights.com is a source here. Liberal use.
Okay. Well,
I wonder if I'm in here. Can I search this real quick?
Hockey Fights, as encouraged on such NHL podcasts as Merrick versus Wyszynski.
Get really excited to see if my name. Wait.
Are you?
Hold. Hold. No results found. Here, let me look for you.
All right.
Merrick.
They have to go to court.
No results found.
Phew.
Leahy. Wait a second.
Hang on. Jen Neal.
Wait a second.
What's up?
Leahy is cited twice in the lawsuit.
He is?
Yes.
What is footnote?
A story he wrote about Chris Pronger being out for the season and a story he wrote about Chris Barch and Brent Gallant doing the helmet removal thing in the preseason.
Oh, God.
Somebody better tell Leahy. Oh, wait a second. This is
Leahy better lawyer up. Hey, Leahy, if you're listening, man, lawyer up, bud.
No, Wyszynski, no Merrick, but there was a Leahy. Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. Better go get that confirmation suit, kid. Get in the court.
Some cool old pictures in this.
Oh, that's a really good picture, right?
Oh, they got the Randy Holt incident from 74 when he went berserk against the Flyers.
Tom Ertz writes in, so is there a hologram Gordie Howe?
Oh, man, people that listen to this podcast are dark. I love it.
I can confirm the lawsuit says Gordie Howe died in 2009.
Hey, can confirm. Good to hear from you, bud. Oh, man. First of all, it was Gordie Howe's wife that died of Pick's disease.
Yes.
It wasn't Gordie.
We're not Gordie Howe.
All right.
You want to nail that one down.
Let's just checking Google Trends here. Yeah, no Gordie Howe, rest in peace. Okay, good.
Oh, my God. All right, before we get to the question of the day, I wanted to bring up. Well, first off, great job by Columbus last night. Let's not forget about Columbus in this situation.
Yeah, man.
Closing the deal. Closing the deal in a way that we were wondering if they could, and they certainly did it, using the momentum of that Nathan Horton goal in the first period to carry themselves to victory.
From a month ago.
Over the Dallas Stars. I said last night on Twitter, I'm like, I will buy Todd Richards all the beer if during a first and second period interview he says, well, you know, we really got a nice bit of momentum from that goal from Horty.
That's a good one. What would have happened if it just ended up being a 1-0 game and both goaltenders had shutouts? Would only one goaltender get the shutout?
Yes.
Okay.
Because it's not a 1-0. It's a 1-0 game. I mean, you can't get a shutout when you've been scored upon, right?
So you'll play a full 60 minutes.
Here's the interesting thing, though, from a stats point of view, because I know a lot of people were obsessed with like the disappearing stats from the previous game. Yeah. I was really interested to find out that the Horton goal gets changed from a power play goal to a
goal. I didn't know that, but I mean, does it make sense? Because how can you spot someone a power play goal? Because essentially you're spotting someone a goal.
Right, because I guess in order to have a power play goal, you'd have to have a penalty on record, right?
Correct.
So they didn't want to do that. They can't do that. Every other stat's erased except for the goal.
But then, if that player didn't play in that game, how could you have a goal if the player didn't actually play in the game?
Well, now you're getting real existential on us, aren't you?
What is the metaphysical status of Nathan Horton's power play goal a month later played?
What if he's not playing the game, but the game's playing him, man?
Is it the weekend already?
The BJs deserve all the credit in the world for making the playoffs, and I really hope that it works out where we get Pittsburgh and Columbus and Detroit, Boston, because that's the sexiest series for me. Mm-hmm. Those two combinations in the Eastern Conference would be the best. And that brings us to the question of the day. What are the matchups you want to see the most? Will Munson, you have to look no further than the Western Conference. L.A., San Jose, first round will be a guaranteed 6-7 game war of a series.
Hang on. Are you getting nervous about San Jose, Greg?
I am definitely getting nervous, but I don't want any part of the Jonathan Quick in the first round.
Did you see that last night?
Let's see here. Am I getting nervous about the Sharks? Their goalie is dog shit right now, and the Kings have Jonathan Quick. Yeah, I would say I'm a little nervous about that.
Go Stalock, man. He's been good. Hey, speaking of goaltenders, is John Gibson going to be the goalie for the Ducks in the playoffs?
Seems like he did okay. You know, I thought he let in a couple softies last night.
36 saves, bro.
But I know he did very well beyond the two softies. But the two goals he gave up, I thought were weak ones. But luckily, there was a sieve on the other end.
You're Mike Keenan when it comes to goalies. Jeez.
Then the potential and most intriguing series to me would be a Chicago versus St. Louis series. The idea two of these four cup-contending teams could be out in the first round is just mind-boggling. Well, I mean, Chicago and St. Louis wouldn't play the first round.
Let me ask you this, because my answer would be Detroit. Pittsburgh, Detroit, who are you taking? Oh, no, it wouldn't be. It would be Boston, Detroit right now. Boston, Detroit right now. Let's say Columbus and Detroit flip, and it's Detroit and Pittsburgh in the opening round.
Boston and seven.
Yeah, no, hang on. Boston, Detroit, you're taking Boston. What if it's Pittsburgh, Detroit?
Now, keep in mind, these are preliminary picks.
It's just time killer picks.
Detroit.
We're on a podcast. We have nothing left to do this afternoon. Picks.
Detroit and six.
Yeah, I would take Detroit. That's going to be real. Dude, that's going to be really interesting to see what happens with Pittsburgh.
It's not that I don't have any confidence in Marc-Andre Fleury, but I don't. I'd hesitate to take Columbus in that
series,
too.
Did you see that Snow Angel save last night? Come on.
Our friend Arpan.
Arpan Basu?
From the NHL.com.
Great guy.
Had the greatest tweet of all time last night because Alan Walsh questioned if that was the best shootout goal of all time, the shootout save of all time. And Arpan writes him, it's the worst missed poke check of all time. That was great.
Somewhere Johnny Bauer is saying, that's not how you do this. That is, again, if Johnny Bauer is not dead.
Zach Edwards writes in.
You never know about our old heroes these days based on lawsuits.
Penguins versus
Johnny's
Penguins
alive,
playoffs,
by the way.
Round three. My sister is a Pens fan, and I'm a Wings fan. So much upcoming trash talk. That's true, man. This is the rubber match of that rivalry.
That's right.
Jordan Bahar writes in, the potential playoff matchups everyone's forgetting about. Two playoff matchups I'm dying to see is Pittsburgh versus Philly and Columbus versus the New York Rangers. Right now, those aren't the current matchups, but I think people are forgetting that Columbus and Philly are tied with 91 points, mm-hmm. and each has only two games left. If the BJs can win both and the Flyers tumble, Columbus can capture the third spot in the Metro Division.
Well, and they've got two games left, Columbus does.
I still think that the better matchups are Philly and the Rangers and Columbus and Pittsburgh, personally.
Yeah. Because Columbus-Pittsburgh just geographically makes a lot of sense for a good rivalry.
I get what Jordan's saying. He's thinking Rick Nash.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really lose with either of those. No. Fuck, maybe they got it right, man. Maybe the alignment was a good idea.
Looks good. First year in, well done.
Wow.
Looks good. You got it.
Eric Clam writes in, love the show here, the mattress I'd love to see. Dallas versus St. Louis. Dallas is one of the only teams that has gotten the best of St. Louis more than not this year would be a great series. Detroit versus Boston. Boston looks like the best team in the league, but Detroit is on a great run and reloading from injury. I'd be worried if I were Boston. That's a good little sample from the listeners.
Hmm.
Before we go, sir, real quick, I wrote about the Norris today. I wanted to get your take. I say Chara. You say what?
I read your piece, and I haven't looked at it stats-wise the way you have yet. This is just eyeball. But the best defenseman that I've seen this year is Duncan Keith.
Okay.
I would go Duncan Keith.
Even though Duncan Keith doesn't get the top defensive assignments.
I understand all of that. And that's why I haven't looked at it as closely as you have. I read your piece, and I enjoyed it, and I thought it made a lot of sense. But Chara is just too slow.
Let me ask you this about...
Come on, it's a little joke, bud. You didn't get that one? Come on.
I got that. Okay, yeah, that's funny. I'm on the day three of a juice cleanse, and I'm sick.
Oh, do you have the headaches yet?
I might join that concussion lawsuit. Put it that
way. You're gonna start suing fruit and vegetables?
I might sue myself for going on a juice cleanse. What do you think about finally the Mark Giordano issue?
Oh,
62 games played.
Yeah, that's the problem.
I mean, you go into the numbers. That guy's the best defenseman in the league this year.
See, I'm quite willing, you know, to go as far as saying when you look at the Calgary Flames and much is being made of their 77 points and a lot of it is being pointed at, oh, those hard-working Flames, they're the new Sens, the pesky Flames. Look at those Flames go, man! Every shift, every player leaves it all on the ice. I think it's a combination of they're working hard and Mark Giordano's just having a bonanza season. Kyrie Ram has played well lately, but I mean, I think so much of what's happened with Calgary, and Calgary was supposed to be in that hunt for the first overall pick. Like they were supposed to be awful. Like we're getting 55 points. Awful. I just think that Giordano has been like singularly the guy on that team that has made, I don't want to say respectable, you know, when you only have 77 points, but better than Edmonton.
Interesting.
I think it's all fantastic. Right. And again, and I've said it before, he is the only player in the history of the game who's gone to the KHL and come back better.
Yep.
Only one.
Indeed. All right, everybody.
What do you think of Giordano?
I love him. I think if you go inside the numbers, it's crazy. It's crazy good.
Yeah.
Crazy good. They're the way they play with him on the ice versus off the ice is remarkable, but that could just be because they're not a very good team overall.
They're not.
Yeah.
They're punching way over their weight.
All right.
Oh, by the way, pour one out today for your friends at CBC. It was a tough day. Over 600 cuts made to the broadcaster here in Canada. I worked there for 4 years. I grew up watching CBC programming, and to watch what happened today, which pretty much, you know, I don't want to say it didn't completely eliminate the sports department, but it's pretty eviscerated. I feel awful for what happened at CBC today. Terrible.
Right, right. And also, yeah, and then getting out of the sports game, too, they said.
Well, getting up, you know, they're not going to bid for sports properties anymore. I still think they'll be in the Olympics game. I mean, I think CBC will still surf on those waters. But as far as competing for properties, it's not going to happen anymore.
Sounds sad.
It is. It's a sad day for Canadian media today.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Hopefully, the voice holds up. We can do it tomorrow. Game show Friday. Thanks to Kenny Holland.
Yeah. Gave us a great quote, too, that's been... Oh, Daryl Sador, by the way, tomorrow.
Oh, sweet.
And I may ask Daryl Sador, I'm just going to chum the waters here. Tomorrow, if you listen to the podcast, I'm going to ask him the most arcane question I've ever asked any guest on the podcast.
Oh, shit.
Yep.
You do understand how high that bar is.
I'm leaping over it. Fosbury flop. Tomorrow, I am Dick Fosbury.
All right, everybody. We will talk to you on the morrow. Bye. Thank you.